The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Thursday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this August 15th, 2024. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, with you for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. It's another sunny and hot one here in Auburn, Alabama, on the plains, but we are getting closer and closer to the start of football season. High school football is 8 days away, and then Auburn football, the university, is just 16 days away. And so much to get to on the show today. Appreciate you being with us for the next 2 hours. Thanks to Doug Amos for getting things kicked off from 11 to 2. You got me 2 to 4, and then the drive with Bill and Dan from 4 to 6. On this Thursday, we'll have Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network. He'll join us coming up in about 30 minutes or so. We'll talk all things Auburn with him as a couple of the fall sports get off today. Soccer starts today for Auburn University, so we'll get a little preview of that, plus get his thoughts on a couple of the big storylines happening around Auburn athletics. And then coming up in hour number two, it is Thursday, and one of our longest standing guests on this show, Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, will be with us on the phone lines once again. So looking forward to both of those guests. And on this Thursday, an unexpected visit, but always glad to have this guy in the studio, the voice of Lee Scott Academy, Christian Griffin, with us on ESPN. My man, good to see you.
Man, you're stressing us out a little bit talking that high school football is only 8 days away.
Man, I've been stressed, brother.
We've been spending all morning trying to get everything ready, and hey, I had nothing going on. It was hit about 150, and I was like, you want me? And you were like, yeah, let's do it.
Come on. It's always a good time. And that's the good thing about this show. We got people in and out all the time. And so we're going to have a lot of fun on the show today. Would love for you to be a part of it. And you can call in or you can text us. You can call us at 334-321-1390. That's the number to get you through. Talk to us. Ask your comments, questions, concerns. All right, 334-321-1390. Or you can shoot me a text. That's the easy way to do it at 334-784-1090. 67. That's the text box, the On the Line text box, 334-784-1067. Want to start the show today with what ESPN released with their FPI projections. All right, now, if you forget what the FPI means, here is what the definition of FPI, the Football Power Index, this is what it is from ESPN. It's a measure of team strength that is meant to be the best predictor of a team's performance going forward for the rest of the season. FPI represents how many points above or below average a team is. Projected results are based on 20,000 simulations of the rest of the season using FPI results to date and the remaining schedule, end quote. Which means this is updated after every game, after every week. And so they use the numbers and they use a lot of analytics here, and they take your offense, they take your defense, they take your special teams, they take your opponents, they take your results, and they run 20,000 simulations through their computer system, and it pops out a number, it pops out a percentage of what you're supposed to win in the games that you're supposed to win. And they did that for Auburn today. The results are out, and according to ESPN's FPI, the Tigers are supposed to go 7-5 this year with Hugh Freeze in year two. Before we dive into the games in particular, Kristen, do you feel that that's pretty spot on? Do you feel that that's pretty accurate? Because you were with me when we were doing our over-under predictions, and according to ESPN Bet, their betting service there at the Worldwide Sports Leader, the over-under is 7.5.
Yeah, they have it to where 7.5, but if you bet the over, it is plus money right now, sitting at plus 124. So they are expecting Auburn to not get that eighth win, which we have talked about. There are multiple ways that they can find that way to get the eighth win. And before everybody just kind of kicks the bucket with the FPI, they did project Auburn to go 6-6 last year, and
that was accurate.
Found a way to be accurate, although I'd like to see the game that Auburn won, because I'm sure they had, obviously, them beating New Mexico State. So it'd be interesting. I'll try and find that one here in just a moment as we go through everything.
It was the Arkansas game.
Okay, they so they had Arkansas projected.
They had a 33% chance to beat Arkansas,
wow,
and they went on and just slaughtered them on the road.
One of the few road games that, I mean, Auburn has taken care of business in a way to where it was actually halfway through the second quarter or halfway through the third quarter where you could lean back in your chair.
Starter sat down. Yeah, it was. It was, of course, the Arkansas game that they won that they weren't supposed to, and then, yeah, the New Mexico State game that they lost that they were supposed to win.
So it just makes it to where, FPI's like, yeah, see, we called it perfectly, exactly like we thought would happen.
Yeah, and if just for the record here, Auburn actually had two games last year where they won, where they were projected their percentage was lower than 50%. The other game was the Cal game, about a 44% chance to beat Cal a year ago. So
okay,
so take that for what it is. All of these percentages are not 100%. They're not guaranteed, and anything can happen in a football game. This is just what ESPN simulations are predicting is going to happen. And Auburn went 2-1 against their spreads, against their percentages last year. Should have gone 3-0.
Yeah.
So keep that in mind as we go through this, okay? The first game, the season opener, August 31st, 16 days from now, against Alabama A&M, 99% chance to win, right? No shocker there, no surprise. That is the percentage higher than what it was for New Mexico State last year, which was at 96%. But anything above 95%, you feel really good about. And so we're going to keep that part of the conversation out of it for now. Auburn has a 99% chance to beat Alabama A&M. All right, cool. Cal comes to town in week two. Auburn's chance to win, according to ESPN, when Cal comes to Jordan-Hare in week two of the season, is 72%. A 72% chance to beat the Golden Bears in Jordan-Hare in week two of the college football season. And I'll go ahead and give you my thoughts on that. I think that's pretty spot on. I think that's pretty – I would put it at about a 75% chance that Auburn wins that game because, look, last year was ugly. Last year was one of the worst football games other than the Missouri game a few years ago with Brian Harsin that I've ever seen, and yet Auburn found a way to win. Talent-wise, they'll be much better than they were a year ago, and they'll be much better than Cal. And it's at home. They don't know anything about playing in the South in the heat or playing inside of Jordan-Hare Stadium. Auburn should win that game. I would personally put it on about a 75% chance. So ESPN saying 72, not all that bad.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I know that they don't openly admit it. I would love to know how much of a factor FPI weighs home field advantage, especially in games like the SEC. And I want to know how much the South, if they play the heat in any sort of factor in it, because a 2:30 kickoff inside Jordan-Hare when you're, let's go, hold on.
The first week of September.
Give me just a second while I type my computer.
Oh, gosh. Well, again, Auburn, 72% chance to win and beat Cal in week two. And it's just what you expect.
It is 68 degrees in Berkeley, California right now.
Oh, my God. What's the humidity out there right now? What's the humidity?
60%.
Okay.
So that's more than usual.
It is currently 89 degrees in Auburn. And the,
so there's already plus 20.
And do they have the feels like temperature? They might on here. I don't know.
They definitely do.
Oh, feels scroll like down. 96.
There we go. Okay, so almost a 30-degree temperature difference, and you have a 2:30 kick inside Jordan-Hare with the sun absolutely beaming down on you.
Mm. That's an extra 10%.
I feel exactly, and that's why you don't feel like they necessarily weigh that into it, but I mean, imagine being one of the big bodies, the offensive line, where that Cal offense is going to lean on Jaden Ott, their star running back. And, I mean, it's going to be one of those games to where you could see it where neither team has a lot going early, but as Auburn continues to run the ball and use that physicality because they're used to that heat in Auburn, Alabama, to where the third quarter, things start to open up, and then you could expect Auburn, I think, to have a big-time fourth quarter just when Cal is kind of throwing the white flag, just trying to take a couple breaths in and trying to refine the Gatorade bucket.
So based off of the percentages, Auburn's 2-0, right? Then you play New Mexico. This percentage is a little bit lower than you would expect with a non-conference game, and this is New Mexico, not New Mexico State. It's 92.5%. It is the, how about this note from Nathan King at Auburn Undercover, the only opponent on Auburn's 2024 schedule that the Tigers have never seen before. How about that?
Wow.
I didn't know that. How about that? 92.5%. Again, Auburn should win that game. We're not going to hang up on that. We're not going to waste our time talking about a game that, yes, if flukes happen and you play terrible and don't prepare, then yes, you'll lose. But Auburn should win, and they should be 3-0. You then get to your first SEC game of the season, where, a reminder, Auburn had a 33% chance to beat Arkansas on the road a year ago. That percentage has been flipped on its head, and it's nearly 70%, 69.4, a nice percentage there, 70% chance that Auburn beats Arkansas week 4 inside Jordan-Hare.
Auburn has a 20-12-1 advantage all-time over Arkansas, including wins of 9 of the last 11.
And the beatdown of a year ago.
That's an understatement. And, oh, man, that's another great statistic and a great note from King, saying that losing at home versus Arkansas isn't something that Freeze wants to do, obviously, but considering the last two coaches to do it were fired that fall.
How about that?
Brian Harsin and Gene Chizik.
Yeah, that's about right. And, not to go down this rabbit hole for a second, and look, I like Arkansas. It's fine. I have buddies, really good friends in Arkansas. My buddy Ty Richardson at ESPN Arkansas, hoping to see him this fall and make the trip to the Plains. But that gets back to Auburn's just a better program.
Yeah.
Historically, right now, always, Auburn is a better football program than Arkansas. And losing to them is not acceptable. It's not okay.
Regardless of how great of a season that they might have. We'll get to it a little bit earlier, but it almost has the same mindset of a Missouri team or a Kentucky team, because it has the anti-recency bias, the history bias of how poor those programs have historically been. So regardless of this past year when Missouri beat Ohio State in a New Year's Six bowl game and won 11 games. You know what I mean? It comes to the mindset of, dang, we lost to Missouri.
Yeah, it carries a negative connotation, negative weight. It just does. It's to their own fault, I guess. But
definitely.
It's just one of those opponents that Auburn has played for so long, and it's one that Auburn fans expect to win every single year. And as you mentioned from Nathan King, saying you lose that game at home and it's almost a death sentence. Like, it's almost a, all right, here's your resignation. Goodbye. Like, that's that. And if you want to get to the standard that Auburn believes it can be, if you want to get back to competing and winning national championships, guess what? You have to beat Arkansas year after year. You have to win games where you're favored to win 70% going into it. You have to take care of business in those games.
Last time Arkansas came to Jordan-Hare, it was that 11 a.m. kickoff where Arkansas beat the Auburn Tigers 41-27.
Golly, what that would have been 20?
That was October 29th, 2022.
Oh, man.
And that was the game when many were saying that Harsin kind of got the boot before making his way to the locker room.
And the one before that was during COVID, when there were no student or there were no fans other than us, the students. It was an absolute downpour. And correct me if I'm wrong, isn't that the Bo Nix spike game where he got caught trying to fake spike and they ended up calling it and they went backwards and Auburn caught a break and ended up winning the game?
You are correct. Auburn in October 10th of 2020. So not quite COVID then.
Yeah. That was the COVID fall.
Oh,
yeah.
No, yeah, you're right.
That was
Auburn
COVID
won
fall.
30-28 when they were down 28-27 and then kicked a field goal within the final 10 seconds.
In an absolute monsoon. It was disgusting. It was a flood all day long. And I was just talking about this here on the show the other day, how that was, again, that was the year that it was students in the stands. That's it. And maybe select other fans. But I just remember standing in pockets of, like, four or five students, and then you had to be separated so far. God, that sounds horrible to start talking about right now. But I just remember the last couple of times that Arkansas has been here, it hasn't been the prettiest of scenes. And so, according to ESPN, again, we're going through the FPI projections, Tigers are 4-0 to start the season with percentage wins against Alabama A&M, Cal, New Mexico, and Arkansas. And then you get to what most people claim is the most crucial game on the schedule. We'll start there when we come back, as we're just underway here on the Thursday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Back inside the studio here at ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, as we continue talking the FPI projections from ESPN, and they've predicted Auburn's record for 2024 in college football. And we told you that it's 7-5. But what are the 7 wins and what are the 5 losses, you may ask? Well, according to the percentages, Auburn is now 4-0. They've beaten their non-con game. They got Cal taken care of. They beat Arkansas. Everything's rolling, feeling pretty good, right? And here comes one of the most crucial games on the schedule, the newcomers to the conference, the Sooners of Oklahoma. And the percentage chance that FPI gives from ESPN, Auburn's chance to win, is 38%. Is that too low or too high for you, Christian?
Again, I feel like they're not playing a bunch of factors into everything that needs to be a factor for it, for this game. That within Auburn now with a 38% chance of winning, this is going to be Jackson Arnold's first road true SEC game as the starting quarterback for Oklahoma. You're taking a game inside Jordan-Hare, who Kirby Smart and Carson Beck talked about yesterday, or I guess the day before you talked about it yesterday, of how it is the toughest places to play in all of college football. And obviously, a little bit of Auburn bias comes into it, but I feel like even just being a public viewer of the game, you would expect this game to be a very close game all the way into the fourth and throughout the fourth quarter. This is only the third time that these teams are meeting. The last time was with Oklahoma, had Baker Mayfield, and Auburn was with Sean White. I remember watching that game, the Sugar Bowl, and then the other time was all the way back in 1972. Obviously, these two teams will see each other a lot more now that Oklahoma has made the jump, but I feel like, again, we've talked about it. They sit at that 7.5 line for Auburn's wins. This is one of those games that, as an Auburn fan, you feel like you should win at home, and especially coming off of a 4-0 start that is projected. Obviously, there's different ways that Auburn can go about that. If you look really ugly in your first four games, or you find a way and you have to escape Jordan-Hare with a field goal against Arkansas again, then all of a sudden,
then the mood changes,
right,
for sure.
Very much so. But if you take care of business 3-0, especially against Cal, who personally I think is the most important game on the schedule, not necessarily from a player standpoint, but from a fan base standpoint, because if California comes in here and you lose to Cal, the fan base is going to go off the rails.
Even if you look gross again, that's not a good way to start the year.
Right, again. And so that's why I feel like you take care of business all four games, especially against an Arkansas team that is coming in limping, on the verge of possibly not having a head coach. I think all things lead for you to win that game, and it's going to be a game that you need to win to get to that 8-win spot.
I will put this in perspective for you. And again, the FPI is based off of offense, defense, special teams numbers, their ratings, the values that they represent, and they do 20,000 simulations based off of your past games, your upcoming opponents, and all of your team numbers, and they run 20,000 simulations of this thing, okay? And they have come up with the fact that Auburn only has a 38% chance to beat Oklahoma. But a lot of Auburn fans, like you mentioned, have a lot of confidence for this game. They believe, most of them, and I've told them they should demand it. Auburn fans should demand to win this game.
Yeah.
And they feel that way because of it being week 5 earlier in the year. Auburn should be 4-0, and it's inside Jordan-Hare Stadium. To put this in perspective for you and to show just how much of a factor that last one is and how much confidence that brings to the fan base and you hope the team, what if this game was in Norman? What if Auburn was 4-0, Oklahoma's 4-0, but the first road trip of the season is to Norman, Oklahoma in week 5? How much confidence do you lose if Auburn were to be on the road in this game, which they will be a year from now, yeah. But in this particular schedule, how much confidence do you lose going on the road for this game? I lose a lot.
I lose a lot of it just from the standpoint because of how unproven this team is on the road, other than the Arkansas game last year, and especially you're going to a place for the very first time since they've made their conference jump to the SEC. Another thing, too, this Auburn team is relying on so many freshmen that there's no way the FPI, at least right now, can put an index on those freshmen, which
is
such a...
Yeah, it's supposed to take like transfers into consideration.
Right, but nobody has any idea what even Cam Coleman is going to produce as a freshman, much less Perry Thompson, Bryce Kane, Malcolm Simmons, DeMarcus Riddick, Amaris Williams, all of those guys that are coming in and wearing an Auburn jersey for the first time as a true freshman that are expected to have minutes and have snaps. I just wonder how you can't push a number on that as well.
Really,
it makes it to where, what is that 38% if it's next year in Jordan Hare where Cam Coleman wins SEC Freshman Receiver of the Year? Well, you know what I'm saying? Like, what kind of
that's a really underrated
does
point.
That put?
Yeah, I mean, because you legitimately can't calculate it.
Yeah.
It doesn't exist. You can try, you can predict it, but you can't calculate it. And that's what is important to know about this FPI is it is a calculation. It is. They're basing it off of numbers, and they update it as the weeks go on. So preseason, sure, Auburn may only be a 38% chance to win, but by the time we get to that game, and we continue to say if Auburn takes care of business, because we are not at the point to assume that yet. We're not. I'm sorry. We're not. We're not at the point to assume that Auburn beats Cal and beats Arkansas or beats A&M, Alabama, A&M, or New Mexico because of what happened a year ago. And we will continue to preface that. But if Auburn wins those four first games and they look good doing it, heck, what happens if Oklahoma has a loss, which is very possible before they come here?
I was about to say the exact same thing. As of right now, they're projecting both teams to be 4-0
going into this matchup. Okay, that's a good point, I didn't look at Oklahoma yet.
With Oklahoma playing Temple, Houston, Tulane, and then hosting Tennessee the week before.
What's the percentage on that game?
Let me find that one.
I bet it's probably Oklahoma a 60% chance.
That's
maybe
because
even
they're at home. That would be my
sure,
guess.
Sure, absolutely. And yeah, so if you take Auburn playing Oklahoma here at home versus on the road, what would happen if they played neutral site week 5 just for whatever, right? Just for kicks and giggles there. How would you feel if an Auburn fan if Auburn were playing Oklahoma neutral site? I would still feel pretty good about it. But going on the road, I wouldn't. I mean, I think the 38% would be a respectable on-the-road percentage for Auburn to win that game. I just think it should be higher for them playing at home. I really
for the Oklahoma-Tennessee game. So Tennessee will come in, at least as of right now, as the 15th-ranked team. Oklahoma, the 16th.
What a game.
Oklahoma has a 58.9% chance of winning, and right now are listed as 4.5-point favorites. And
I said 60%.
You give a team at home
10%?
three and a half points, and you give them about 10%. So you're basically saying that this is a 1-point Oklahoma win right now.
And I think that's pretty accurate. I think that's spot on for sure. I really do. So Auburn is projected to lose against Oklahoma, according to the ESPN FPI. And, you know, those first four games, I think, are just so important to that game in particular, whether who wins or loses, what the betting line is, what the percentage is. Like, all of that has a factor in this. And we're going to hold off on the rest of them, and we'll get to it as we go throughout the show. Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network is about to join us, but just got a text in the on-the-line text box, and it says, is the Cal running back going to guarantee victory again like he did last year? You remember that last year? He talked a big game, boy.
It was the linebacker versus Jaden Ott, and that was a fun Twitter feed if you got to watch for about the week upcoming. And he had a great first quarter.
He did.
And then all of a sudden it was, let's pump the brakes
a little bit. Eugene Asante emerged from the ground and was like, let me just go out and get 12 tackles and force turnovers and play the game of my absolute life and save Auburn in California at 2 o'clock in the morning. Our man, Eugene Asante, man. That's a funny text, though. I'd forgotten about that, that he, the running back, guaranteed they were going to beat Auburn. I bet he...
The JG guarantee?
No. He didn't do that. And I don't think Cal is going to guarantee any type of wins in week two when they come and visit Auburn in Jordan-Hare. All right, we got to get to break because Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network will join us coming up after this. We'll preview fall sports some more as they get going today, plus his thoughts on Auburn football and a whole lot more. We'll have Brad Law joining us after this.
On the line with Jacob Goertz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Thursday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goertz, and glad to have this guy on the airwaves once again. He joins us every Thursday at this time throughout all of the Auburn athletic seasons. It is Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network. Brad, hope you're doing well, and I know you're not working too hard over there because there's really not a whole lot going on.
You know what? All day yesterday, I thought it was Wednesday. I thought it was Thursday, and I had a couple of things that I was waiting until Thursday. Like I set Thursday deadlines for people, and like at 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I did this on two separate occasions. I texted two different people and said, "Hey, is that XYZ ready today, or maybe tomorrow?" And I had to look and go, "Wait, no, I've jumped the gun." So that gave you an idea of how things are going here. Is we're getting our days mixed up.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat, just trying to get everything ready for, of course, the university kicking off in 16 days and the high school season's getting going next week. And it's all an exciting time, but you know this better than most. It's getting through the first one, right? Getting everything going, making sure everything works and sounds good and the production is correct. And then the rest of the season, it's gravy from there.
Yeah, no, you got to get the first one. It's, you know, once you get the first of everything, you're still working hard, but there's not the same pressure that goes with getting the first. So we are very blessed to get to do what we do, whether it's high school or college or daily or weekly or whatever it may be. We're very blessed to be in this spot. So we have work to do, but Jacob, I think we probably have the same enthusiasm that fans who don't work in it have. We're all counting down the days.
Yes, we are. And with so many things happening in the high school and college ranks for football, the other fall sports around the university are getting underway. That includes soccer and volleyball and so many things happening. And I believe soccer gets going tonight. Is that correct, Brad?
Yeah, soccer gets going tonight. Regular season, Karen Hoppe's team, they've had two exhibition games. One was at Mercer, which was just the first on-field action of the year. And then they hosted number 10 Memphis and lost that game 1-0, but hosting the number 10 team for an exhibition. Tonight they're hosting number 5 Clemson. Really tough way to start the season, but a good group. You got a couple of all-SEC caliber players, preseason all-SEC projected players on the team. And again, the veteran coach in the SEC and Coach Hoppe. So 6:30 tonight over at the Auburn Soccer Complex, and admission is free for that matchup. They're open for a strong start to the year.
And with the University of Football for Auburn, of course, 16 days away, there are so many things coming out now. And the big conversation we've had to get the show started is ESPN's FPI, right? The Football Power Index, where they crunch all the numbers, they run 20,000 simulations, and they spit out this projected record for each college football team. And for right now, Brad, they've got Auburn going 7-5, which seems to be right around the most projections for most people. Do you see that as a fair projection for what Auburn football could do this fall?
I'd like to know what the five are. No, I don't. But then again, I'm not objective in any way. So I don't know. Could Auburn go 7-5? Yeah, they could. But I think most Auburn people would be severely disappointed at 7-5, knowing the way they've rebuilt the wide receiver room and the defensive line and I've added depth in the secondary and the offensive line's a little better, and with another year for Peyton Thorne to mature and improve. And I just, man, I'd love to know where the five are. Because if you count all four road games as losses, then you've also got to have a home game that they lose somewhere in there. And I just think it's a tough sell for the team that I have seen so far at that scrimmage on Saturday. And that what we've been able to see in the media viewing windows, that team going 7-5 doesn't make sense to me.
Well, based off the percentages, I can give them to you really quick. It is the Oklahoma game, week 5, at only a 38% chance for Auburn to win. On the road, I know. On the road at Georgia. Yeah, let's start there for a second, because that seems to be a common reaction so far. Only 38% chance for Auburn to beat Oklahoma week 5.
That's surprising to me. They have a brand new quarterback and a brand new offensive line, and I don't really care what their quarterback or our quarterback did in the bowl game, because as we have said before, ESPN has told us for the past decade in their branding from August through the end of the year that unless it's a playoff game, the bowl game doesn't matter. So whether your guys did great or did poorly doesn't matter. So a brand new quarterback and a brand new offensive line and a brand new offensive coordinator, they have a linebacker up for National Defensive Player of the Year honors, and he's earned that. And, you know, they've won 10 games, or they're coming off a 10-win season. That you can sell me on why they could potentially win a toss-up game. 38 is really random, and yeah, I'd give Auburn a much higher percentage to win the game than 38. That's a little silly.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And that's such an important game. It's one of those, if Auburn wins, the sky's the limit. If Auburn loses, then, you know, your projections are right around the same. But that's the big one. The other ones are road games. And the other home game that is getting tripped up is Texas A&M, technically at 49%.
Yeah, so more of a toss-up game. And they're saying on a neutral field, A&M would be better. Let's see. I mean, that'll be late November. That's the next to last week of the regular season. We'll see what kind of team they have. I mean, A&M is going to have challenges against Notre Dame to start the year, and they're going to have to, you know, they'll navigate games against Missouri and LSU. And now, look, a lot of these tough games for Texas A&M are in College Station. Their road games in the league this year are Gainesville early in the year, so they probably still have their head coach. Gainesville, they play Arkansas and Arlington, basically a home game. They play Mississippi State in Starkville. They're still rebuilding. They go to Columbia, South Carolina. The game here is by far, objectively, by far their toughest road game of the season. So we'll see. At least I respect the fact that it's a 49% mark there. That's basically a toss-up game.
My whole analysis on A&M is I don't know. I have no idea. And until we see something, and look, it's hard to predict a game that it's played in November anyway. It's August right now, Brad.
Yeah, no, exactly. Auburn's identity was totally different in November than it was in August a year ago.
As it is a lot of times.
Exactly. Even the most successful teams that Auburn has ever had, and you could probably say this about a lot of teams. Look at Alabama last year. Their identity was different in November than it was in August and September. Auburn's identity in 2010 and 13 and 17. Teams take time to develop their identity, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. You also have games along the way that sort of define your effort and attitude and motivation for the rest of the year. A couple of losses early in the year, and you start wondering, does this first-year coach really, you know, do I jive with what he's doing, and do I want to be here next year? And it's just not the same. So it's a, you know, and Auburn can have games like that. You know, if Auburn goes in and beats, Auburn beats Oklahoma there in week 5, and, you know, they're looking at 7 or 8 wins when Texas A&M comes into town. That's a very different team. There's a lot more belief and momentum. And so, yeah, these things are a little silly anyway, but we do have them to talk about in August, so we'll talk about them.
That's right. Well, we're talking with Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network, who's with us every Thursday here on ESPN 106.7 during On the Line. And you had alluded to earlier, you know, these different practice windows that the media gets, and we're thankful for those, and the scrimmage on Saturday, and even the media availabilities that we get with a lot of the assistant coaches, coordinators, and position coaches. And there has been a very consistent feeling of confidence and enthusiasm from all of the assistants that we've had a chance to talk to. And Brad, I'm curious on what you think that means. What does that tell you, that they all seem to be on the same wavelength of this could be a really good team?
Yeah, you have to have that belief, whether, you know, to succeed. You've never, of course, no season in history have players ever come into a media availability and say, you know, this whole thing's really disjointed.
Right.
So you're going to have that. But I think it's consistent with what we've seen with our eyes. I think it's consistent with the alignment that we see right now throughout the program, from the athletic director to the head coach to his top assistants and administrative people, and all the way down to the recruiting staff and their plans. And more so than we have seen, Jacob, in a long time, there is an aligned effort where there's enthusiasm, there's belief, there's confidence, and there's good reason. And when you look at the recruiting and you see, here's an example of plan XYZ working, it gives you a lot of confidence that plan XYZ on the field will also work. Now, is 2024 the year for Auburn to break through, make a playoff? And I don't know. It's not out of the question. But you can certainly see that conversation is more realistic in the years to come. It is a realistic conversation to have in the coming years. And everyone, whether it was Alabama in 2007, Georgia in 2016, or Texas with Sark, To some degree, we've seen it in recent and not so recent history, where there is alignment, there is the great capacity for success. And Auburn has that way that it hasn't in a generation.
How many, and this may be a tough question to ask, but when you have all of that that you just described, which seems to be where Auburn is heading, it's something they haven't had in a while. I mean, is there a particular number of wins that adds to a program, or just the overall success in a long period of time? Do you get what I'm asking there?
I do, but I don't know that you can measure it. It's not a measurable thing. And I don't know, you know, you could get real romantic and dramatic about it if you wanted to, but I go back to that 2014 and the togetherness and the belief that they all had in one another, and the belief that they had in Jason Campbell, and the belief they had in their new offensive staff with Al Borges and company. And faced with the nation's top defense and the prep week disjointed because of a hurricane that rolled through, and on third down and long, Jason rolls out and he's being chased down by those big NFL guys on the LSU roster, and he finds Courtney Taylor for the first down. Does that play happen if the team isn't supremely unified with great belief and confidence in each other? Like if two people are trying to make a play, just hardcore X and O, do they make that play? Mm. Or is there some element of that togetherness that helped them make that play to keep the drive going, and then make the pass a couple of plays later to win the game? And that game, just as I said before, you get certain games throughout the course of certain seasons that define your year and propel you to do great things. Do they do that without that kind of togetherness and belief? I don't know. Maybe they do. Again, you can get as romantic or dramatic as you want to when you start having that conversation, but it doesn't hurt. I think it does allow you to do more as a unit than you might do as a group of individuals, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. And I had a feeling that you'd have a very unique way of putting that into words. And I think the 04 reference is a perfect way to kind of describe that and to give us an insight of what this could become in terms of the togetherness and the cohesion and all of that stuff that you have to have success. And it's just, I think it's just refreshing that we get to have these conversations again, because, you know, as well as I do, it just wasn't there for a little bit.
Yeah, and that's not to talk down to any of the players that have been here in the past. Every player that's been out there on the field is giving his all at all times and wants to win. But, you know, gosh, can you push your guys through an extra rep at practice? Can you keep a guy motivated because that's your teammate, that's your brother. You support him if he's having a bad practice. So maybe the next practice is better so you don't fall behind to prepare for a team that comes in or you're going to Missouri or Kentucky. Just these little things. It is never just about what happens on game day. I'll tell you this, to use the 04 reference again, I watched a video yesterday that Ronnie Brown and Mayo Sowell, they were teammates on the 04 team. Mm. And they talk in this video about the impact of their friendship, their togetherness, they were more than teammates, and how that's affected them individually throughout life. And it is powerful. Those bonds make a difference, whether it's off the field and can absolutely make a difference on the field.
Well, I think it's those types of things, right? It's so unique. And that's why we bring you on, Brad. It's stuff like that. And I knew if I was able to ask you that, I didn't know you were going the 04 route, and I love it. And a lot of our listeners love it too. But again, it symbolizes what it can get to, how special it can be if all of that comes together. And whether that happens this year or not, who knows? But at least you can see that it's heading in the right direction. Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network, away with words, my friend, and it's always a pleasure to have you on the show and listen to you guys each and every week. And it won't be long now. You guys are on the air next week, huh?
We will be on the air next week. Tiger Talk starts Monday. Do I have 30 seconds to finish that point, though, or to add a note?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. It's not just mysticism that wins big games. That's not kind of the point that I was making. That 04 team also had loads of NFL talent on the offensive line, defensive line, obviously in the backfield, wide receiver. There was talent all over the place on that team. That is what ultimately will win you the bulk of your games. That wins the bulk of your one-on-one matchups, which, you know, leads to those wins. But when you have the intangible element, it can make a little difference here or there, and that can add up.
So, sure.
Yes, we start Tiger Talk on Monday, 6 o'clock. And then a week from Monday, we'll be out at Baumhauer's Victory Grill, because a week from Monday, we'll be in our first game week of the season. So we're ready.
Wow, that it's starting to hit when we use language like that we're going to be live and you're going to be on location and the season is literally kicking off in just a couple of weeks and it's so much fun to hear you guys and to have you here on the air, and we appreciate you and each and every week that you join us on ESPN. Anything else that people need to know other than all the broadcasts and stuff going on? Where can they find all of that information?
AU Sports Network on X and Instagram, and as we get a little closer to the season, we'll have a lot more fun content coming from those places. So make sure you download the Auburn Game Day app too for all of our broadcasts, including the student broadcast of the soccer match tonight.
Yes, awesome. Brad, sorry to keep you so long, but really do appreciate your time, and it's always a blast, my friend.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, Jacob. War Eagle.
War Eagle. That's Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network. He joins us every Thursday right here on ESPN 106.7. We'll take our final break, come back, wrap up hour number one. We'll continue talking our FPI stuff, but some news about the college football playoff that we need to discuss. We'll have all that for you when we come back here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
All right, we got a few more minutes. It's going to be rapid fire here, ladies and gentlemen, because we're having to call an audible in our show rundown today. And it's a good thing. It's a good audible, I promise.
This is a Hail Mary. Everybody, we're running straight go routes.
Yeah, this isn't a reverse jet sweep that gets caught 20 yards in the backfield. This is a Hail Mary. So we'll have that for you in the second hour to start, because it's about the college football playoff, which is what everybody strives for nowadays in college football, or at least they should. And so we'll wrap up our FPI stuff really, really quick. We got a little bit of it there with Brad Law, and always appreciate him. And if you didn't catch what he was talking about there at the end, you're going to have to go back and listen, because that was great stuff. That was really, really good. And so the FPI, the Football Power Index, has Auburn going 7-5 this year. The first loss is Oklahoma. They have them going 4-0, losing to Oklahoma. Brad about fell out of his seat in his office chair when I told him Auburn was only favored or had a 38% chance to win that game. The other losses, as of now, Georgia on the road. Auburn has an 11.5% chance to win that game, which I take that for what it is. At Missouri, 33%. I think that's fair. I think you give Auburn a 3% chance to go in there and win on the road for a Missouri team that's expected to be really good this year. I think that's fine. Again, that percentage could change if Auburn is 5-0, hangs with Georgia, beats whatever the case may be, right? That percentage will most likely change between now and the game at Missouri. At Kentucky, they have Auburn winning that game. 54% chance to win on the road there in Lexington, so that should make Auburn fans feel pretty good. 82% chance to beat Vanderbilt, I think that's too low. Louisiana Monroe, 96%, that's fine. And then they have Auburn going 0-2 to end the year. Texas A&M, technically, Auburn is not favored there. Only a 49% chance to win. And then on the road at Alabama is a 20% chance to win at the end of the season. Has Auburn at 7-5, chance to reach 6 wins, 83% chance to win the conference, less than 1%. And the chance to make the college football playoff, 13.5%. And speaking of playoff, that's where we begin. An hour two with some major changes that some may agree with, but I don't. We'll have that for you coming up in hour number two.
The following is an Auburn Network production.
Are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Thursday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two on this August 15, 2024. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. Joining me in the studio on this unexpected day on a Thursday is Christian Griffin, voice of the Lee Scott Warriors, with me. And we were together in hour one. If you missed any of it, you missed a doozy. Let me tell you what. You need to go back and check out the podcast. It's just the show uploaded on our station website every day. So go check that out. ESPNAU.com will have that loaded for you up after the show today. We talked ESPN FPI projections for Auburn this year, as the numbers and the simulations predicted Auburn to be 7-5. That is what they predicted them to be. You can go and catch that and figure out what wins they have, what losses they have, what percentages on those wins and losses as well. Plus, we had Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network who joined us in the first hour, and that was a really, really good conversation with Brad Law, talking about the cohesion, synergy, and togetherness that this Auburn team and this staff has and what that could lead to for this season. A lot of 04 references in there. So go check that out again. That'll be at ESPNAU.com. You can listen to the show live there each and every day as well. Before we get into what I think is going to be a fantastic conversation, want to remind you that hour number two each and every day here during On the Line on ESPN 106.7 is brought to you by the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. And you can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. So we appreciate them bringing you the second hour during On the Line each and every day here on ESPN. Well, there was some news that came across our timeline, or I guess our phones or whatever the heck you want to say it did, and it forced us to change up our show schedule a little bit, but that's okay. That's what live radio gets the chance to do. This is why live radio is better than anything else, ladies and gentlemen, because we can adjust on the fly.
We can run the no-huddle offense to perfection.
We can, and we've been doing it long enough to where I think we've got it down pretty well. And an article that came out from Heather Dinich just about 10, 15 minutes ago is talking about the college football playoff and how there's a little bit of a change. Christian.
There is. It is basically along the lines of, this is something that you have talked about multiple times. I know we've talked about it in conversation
for
as well. And we've gotten questions about it. We've gotten remarks about it. But it's basically saying now that the College Football Playoff Committee will no longer use conference titles as tiebreakers. Basically saying, if there is a team that's playing well and makes it to that second spot in the SEC championship and they beat number one undefeated Georgia.
Do you want my initial reaction? The headline literally reads, College Football Playoff won't use conference titles as tiebreakers. Do you want to know my initial response to this? I call bullcrap. There's no way. I don't believe it. It's more than that, but we're on radio. Yeah. I don't believe it. I refuse to believe that they won't take it into consideration in some way, shape, or form. And here's why I say that. They're humans.
Yeah.
What are they going to do? Not watch? They're just not going to watch the SEC championship game?
Basically.
Not watch the Big Ten championship game? And just block that out of their memory? It's impossible.
They're going to go to a wedding.
Yeah.
On that Saturday.
Sure. Hey, it's not a fall wedding if it's in December, right? That's preposterous.
It is. And guess who? Out of every team that is in the conversation of the college football playoff, maybe one specifically that's not in a conference, guess which one proposed the idea and was a part of the conversation and the agreement?
Shocker. Shocker.
The Fighting Irish.
Of Notre Dame.
Who play in the ACC and everything
except,
but football.
Except football. Wow. So here's some of the stuff from the article. You can go check it out at ESPN.com. Heather Dinich wrote it earlier today. It starts out saying the College Football Playoff Selection Committee will no longer use conference championships. It's one of its tiebreakers because the new 12-team format guarantees bids for the five highest-ranked conference winners. She goes on to say, the change in protocol, which was approved by the FBS commissioners and Notre Dame athletic director, was implemented at this week's annual meeting of the selection committee members in Laguna, California. And they did release the list of the people that are on that committee. They do rotate a little bit. I'm still not a fan of the fact that we have active sitting athletic directors
yes.
that are a part of the College Football Playoff Selection Committee. Tell me how that makes sense, because why not, right? Why not? I mean, why not have active athletic directors who could or could not have a bias here? Let's put them on the selection committee. That's a good idea, because they'll block it out. They won't use it to their advantage.
Yeah, you don't see it personally, but imagine if John Cohen was on a chairman for the College Football Playoff and Auburn is 9-3 at that point. He wouldn't have any sort of bias on wanting Auburn in at all,
and
right?
And that's nothing on John Cohen. That's
no,
just the natural human thought. That's the natural human action.
So, yeah, that's what I was referring to of all of these other athletic directors for...
Or athletic representatives.
Right. Just anybody that is currently serving in any sort of position for a team or a school can basically now be a plus one vote in any sort of topic of conversation.
Heather goes on to say the four highest ranked conference champions will receive a first round bye, which we knew that. That's 1-4, right? The other tiebreakers include strength of schedule, head-to-head results, and comparative outcomes of common opponents without incenting margin of victory.
Can we also talk about how this is the first time we've had quote-unquote written guidelines for the college football playoff teams for the first time in a decade?
Now, my question is, okay, sure, it's written down. Who says they have to abide by it?
Right.
Who says that they have to go by that and only that?
Considering there's 12 of them that go and close the door and sit at a round table for 2 hours and then all of a sudden have a conclusion.
And have no, don't even have to defend it.
No, not at all.
They'll send out the chair, and he'll talk to ESPN and Reese Davis for 5 minutes and ask him softball questions, and he'll walk away. That's it. And it, if you're, you know, if you're listening right now and you can hear the fire in, yeah, in my voice and yours as well, I mean, it's just, it's aggravating. It's frustrating because the future of college football has changed so much. So much, and it's still changing. This is a huge change today, but yet I feel like we're not getting any better. It's not getting any clearer. It's not benefiting the student athletes and the organizations and the programs that are competing in it. And this is a conversation that we are having in this town for a program that hasn't even been a part of it in the college football playoff. And yet we're still fired up about it because it's just so murky. It's so gross sometimes.
This is something that, again, that I feel like I've talked about ever since the 12-team playoff even came into existence 2 or 3 years ago, about even the college football playoff. And it's 100%, in my opinion, to blame the college football playoff. We talked about it before this segment during the break, that the wording of the playoff is who's in. So it makes it to where if you're not in, you're out. And it makes it to where any sort of New Year's Six games before the 12-team playoff had absolutely zero energy behind it. Look at Florida State last year in the Georgia game. 63-3. You think Florida State was happy to play that game after getting left out of the playoff? No, because they were out. And so it makes it just so many different things. Bowl games nowadays are going to mean absolutely little if you're not in the playoff, and something that you've talked about as well. Conference championships are going to mean nothing.
Bingo.
Because it's not going to matter, because if you're Georgia and you're sitting at the number one seed, why play another game? Why play a conference championship game that you can A, risk losing, or B, risk losing players? Thanks for the invitation, but I'll pass. And a couple years from now, it's going to be the fourth-ranked team and the fifth-ranked team playing their bowl game as the SEC championship game.
And what's so wild to me on this, too, is with that argument in mind, right, with whoever was going to be a top four seed in the college football playoff of these major conferences, of the SEC, the Big Ten, Big 12, and the ACC, that argument would still stand for the number one teams. But the argument that came in was, okay, well, what about a team that is fighting for better seeding in the playoff? Okay, cool. I get it. You want to show up if you're LSU and you're the second best team in the SEC and you want to get the 5 seed and host a game, or the difference,
or you want to jump from 6 to 4 where you don't have to play another week.
Yeah, or go from 8 to 9 to 8 where you get to host instead of go on the road. Like, that argument still stands. Cool. Go play your conference championship game and go play your heart out and earn that right to do whatever it is that you're trying to do. But guess what? That doesn't matter now.
Nope.
That does not exist. According to the College Football Playoff Committee, as of today, conference championship games will not be used as tiebreakers. I think that's an important term we need to sit on too. It's for tiebreakers. Doesn't mean it won't be considered as a whole, but they won't use it as a tiebreaker. I refuse to believe it. I refuse to believe it because of it being human nature. Because of the human factor.
Yeah, there's 0% of... It would be one thing if they were simply putting numbers into a computer and everything had the exact same format. Everything had zero emotions behind it. Everything had zero whatever you want to throw other than strength of schedule, overall record, conference champion, or whatever it may be. But again, as you're mentioning it, they're going to sit in their chair and they are going to watch every single one of these championship games.
Mm-hmm.
And again, as you mentioned, big word is tiebreaker. That is the word that you can't just leave out there. But what a big difference it makes for everything.
Absolutely. And so at what point does it continue to go down the line of, okay, well, now we're not going to use conference championship games at all?
Right. That's going to make it to where, yeah, your team played great, and I know they hit their stride in late October and have played great all November, but, you know, they just didn't play great early on. So although you might play for the conference championship and you might win, sorry.
I would have to read into this a little bit more, but, and I'm trying to figure out how I want to say this here. I would have to read into this a little bit more, but it sounds like to me with them using the tiebreaker word there, winning doesn't gain you anything, but I wonder if losing hurts you.
Could do
right?
a lot.
Does losing hurt? If winning doesn't help you, then losing should not hurt you either in a right. tiebreaker situation.
And that was the reason I brought up the Georgia team, which sure. is why would you play that extra game if you already had the number one seed locked down? Going 12-0 is, yeah, we're going to give you the number one seed. Going 13-0, congrats, here's the number one seed that you already had. But if you lost, yeah, what if all of a sudden, even if you just jump to 3 or 4, where, yeah, you still have the bye week, but then all of a sudden you're playing possibly as a 4 seed, the 6th or possibly even the 5th ranked team. That's a big difference than a 1 seed playing the 8 seed.
Yeah, it's the first step to what I've been talking about for over a year. And people have called me crazy. People said it'll never happen. People, purists have told me that how could you get rid of conference championship games? It's historic. It's tradition. It means something. No, it doesn't.
Didn't bowl games used to mean something?
Exactly. And they mean squat now. Because you said it perfectly. If you're not in, you're out. And that's what you play for. Yeah. You play for championships. You play for a true postseason. And people don't want to hear this, Christian, and that's what makes our show a little bit different. And my show, with all the people that are involved with it, all the guests, all the co-hosts, all the people that sit in the chair you sit in alongside me every day, that's what makes this time slot different than any other show you're going to hear in this market. Because I'll tell you things that people don't want to hear because it's different, because it's true.
Say it.
College football has been so different than everything else, every other sport, because people have been convinced for so long that a 6-6 postseason bowl game was a good thing. Why? Why is that a good thing? You're celebrating mediocrity. You're celebrating being okay. Is that what you want? Is that what people in 2024 want to be a part of? Because they don't anymore. And that's what this is telling you. Whether you like it or not, that's where college football is heading. And for those people that want to celebrate a conference championship, that's fine. Congratulations. And that's great. But I'm telling you that they don't mean anything anymore. Bowl games don't mean anything anymore. And we're going to get to a day and age. I've called it. Where they may not even exist anymore. Playoff games are all that matters. Because guess what? National championships are all that matters. And at the end of the day, in the history books, in the radio world, in social media, and in fan bases across this country, teams and programs are remembered for national championships and not conference championships.
Boom!
And that is what it will be moving forward. There have been great teams that have won conference championships and not won national championships. The 04 Auburn team that Brad Law talked about earlier. That team will be remembered forever, with an asterisk. The 2013 Auburn team will be remembered forever, with an asterisk, because they weren't national champions. And I'm sorry, but that's where we are. That's where we are in today's college football.
There's your little sound bite to plug in for the show right there.
And it ain't even
what a quote by Mr. Jacob Goins right there. I mean,
it's true.
Golly.
I'm sorry.
That's why you tune in right there. 2 to 4, Monday through Friday. That's all you need to hear.
Boom. 334-321-1390. I want to hear from you. That's my take. You heard me. I've got my sense in. Want to hear from you. 334-321-1390. You can text us as well. 334-784-1067. We'll keep talking about this and dive a little bit deeper. Before we get to Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC, I have a feeling that man's got something to say about all this too. We'll have all that and more when we come back here on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 1067.
You are on the line on ESPN 1067. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Back inside the studio here at ESPN 1067, and we'll just get straight to the phone lines calling in as we were coming back from break. And so let's throw it to them. 334-321-1390. You're on the line. Who are we speaking with?
Hey, Bo, this is Greg. How you doing?
Hey, Greg, I'm good. How are you, brother?
Man, it's been a long week.
It's still Thursday, my man.
It's hot. Well, I'm off the ball, but I don't like cutting grass and all the honeydews. I don't know if I can miss that at all.
Yeah.
I just wanted to call in and say, man, I agree with you, but I've been saying this for a long time. I know at least the past 3 years. Whenever I heard about the playoffs, I already said the same thing you said. The conference championship is going to end up penalizing.
Yep.
Now, I like the historic value of it. I do. Let me throw you my idea that I've told people this, what I would do. And in this scenario right here, you're going to do away with the opt out.
Okay.
So instead of having a bowl season, all right, so the end of the year, do away with the conference championship game. If you tie, you tie. You know, just like in basketball, you can share it. You know, share a piece of whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That game, like you're saying, like look at Georgia. They had to play that game last year. They'd have been in, right? They played it and got knocked out.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you play it if you're SEC? I mean, you already got the freaking the who's who minus Vanderbilt. So, I mean, why would you do that?
Right, especially for the SEC where you're going to get so much love and favoritism because of how good the conference is anyway. Like, you don't need an extra championship game to prove that you're better than everybody else. You're going to get that from the committee because they respect you as a conference.
Well, and it's that, and it's the fact of you beat yourself up with the SEC gauntlet every single year. So a 9-3 SEC team is going to be much better than the average 10-win team in any other conference.
So, you know, in that situation right there, say you're not a 3-Auburn team, you beat the number one team, I'd rather have that right there on my resume than have to worry about going and getting kicked out in the conference game.
Yep, boom.
Championship game.
Yep.
So, and also, do away with the bowl games. And here's why I say, if you want to have bowl games, do it at the beginning of the season as an exhibition game. If you want to do it like that, do it as an exhibition game, a warm-up game for your season. You go, you know, like Auburn does, they go to the Maui Invitationals and do, you know, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of something like that. Do your bowl game at the beginning of the next year. Maybe you won't have all these opt-outs. You have people, you know, you're trying to get ready, both teams, and try not to throw everything on the table. But, and then after that, that's when, in my opinion, you ought to have your top 25. Because once you've seen the products on the field, they're not doing all this guesswork. I don't know. But what do I know? I guess it's a talking point.
Right. Well, no, I like
kind of where
I'm at. Yeah, I like where you're heading on that, man. And hey, it's great to hear from you. We appreciate you listening and calling in. Thanks so much. 334-321-1390. Go ahead.
Well, that was what I talked about a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, you did.
In the very first game of the year, have a metaphorical dice with every single team on there, and you roll two of them, and all right, you guys are meeting matchup week one. So you could do it like that. Or, as Greg was saying, I might be a college football playoff chairman right there in 2030 or whatever. We gotta send him up there to bring some common sense to the world.
You got my vote.
But again, as you mentioned it, have it to where those top teams or whoever you were going to play, yeah, play them week one. It gets you to where you're facing new teams every single year, and it gets you excited for the upcoming season.
Which is what we're already kind of doing, though. I mean, look at all these great non-conference games early in the year. It may not necessarily be week one, but I mean, Auburn playing Penn State and Cal and Miami and UCLA, which I know that one's not on the schedule anymore. But those types of games, like, for these power conferences, yeah, require it to, and I've been on this train for a long time too, where you play three crappy non-conference games a year. And I know the reasoning. You don't have to explain it to me, the money and the tradition, yada, yada, yada. I get it. But let's just be real. Like, we've got to find a way to move past bigger schools funding smaller schools programs. And that sounds bad. And if you disagree with me, that's fine. But would you rather, in the next 16 days, would you rather Auburn be opening up with UCLA or Alabama A&M? Be honest with yourself. Would you rather that be the game on the schedule or play that? Would you rather it be, and I get the game before like the Iron Bowl and stuff like that, that's fine. But to get the season started, I mean, who cares if you lose? What's worth more? A win over a mediocre mid-major team by 30, or fight your heart out, or even a blowout loss against a really good team. You learn so much more about yourself in those types of games. And on the bowl game thing, before I let you get going, Christian, the bowl game, that's where I was going. If you asked most coaches, closed door, sworn to secrecy, who don't make the playoff moving forward, hey, do you really want to play this game? They're going to tell you no. The only reason they like it is for the extra month of practice. That's it. Hey, NCAA, let's ask you to do something worthy for once. Give them more time. Let them practice. If they want to play in some crappy game, call each other up. Let's play and then move on. That's my solution.
Even, going back to what you had last year, you talked about UCLA, even if it was Auburn versus Maryland, to start the year this year, there would be much, much more hype around it just because, again.
I see what y'all are saying. Okay, I see. So you guys are saying whoever you would end up playing at the end of the season bowl game, that's who you start the year with.
That's one way of talking about it. Or okay. It could just be a randomized, hey, Power Four conferences, let's roll.
Sure.
And this is who you're playing. But from that standpoint of, instead of taking away bowls, having them at the end of the year where Greg was talking about you have all these opt-outs, mm-hmm. instead, nobody's going to opt out for week one. So let Auburn play Maryland
right.
strength on strength. If you want to have it at a neutral site, sure, have it at a neutral site or have it at whoever was ranked higher at that point in the season. But you're going to have a full roster for both teams, and it makes it to where you're talking about. Auburn goes out and beats Alabama A&M 55-0. Okay, they were supposed to.
Where you used a fifth of your playbook.
And it does absolutely nothing. It's what we talked about even with last year's, or what we've talked about with the conference championships, of it does more to lose than it does to win. So you play somebody like Maryland, who, again, I feel like if you got a second crack at him, you have a little bit better chances with everything, but it makes it to where even if you were to lose that game, it wouldn't be something where you're not learning anything at all about yourself.
And I'll add one more thing before the music kicks us out of here. Talking about tiebreakers, which is how this whole thing got started, right, with the college football playoff not using the conference championship games as tiebreakers, guess what? You could use season openers against another group or another Power Four school as a tiebreaker yeah. if you needed to use that, because you're not using the Alabama A&M game for anything. But if Auburn, beats Maryland or UCLA compared to a team that only beat Northwestern, all right, better win. Boom, you're in.
It's crazy. What do we know?
What do we know, man? We're just radio heads, man. That's all I know. What I do know is that Chris Gordy's going to join us when we come back, and I cannot wait for him to get on this radio and talk a little bit about this as well. Stick around. He'll join us after this.
On the line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Thursday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Joining me in the studio is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goetz, and with us on the phone lines, he is our Thursday guest at 3:30. It's Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast. Chris, hope you're doing well as we get closer and closer to the start of football season.
Oh yeah, man! It's gonna be fun. We got our last vacation happening this weekend, and then when I get back, we're in full on countdown mode till week zero. Which, outside of Florida State, Georgia Tech next week, everything else kind of sucks. But hey, it's college football week next week.
I mean, the Florida State Georgia Tech game could end up being interesting, no?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That game actually might be decent because Georgia Tech's actually, they're getting back to boards being respectable. And you know, I was talking to my buddy who covers Florida State the other day, and he said they have a ton of question marks. He's like, they've recruited well, and Mike Norvell's a good coach, but, like, they lost a ton from that team last year. He's like, there's a lot of question marks, you know. So it'll be very interesting to see that game over in Dublin a week from Saturday.
Well, the storyline that has taken over the second hour of our show today is an article that Heather Denich put out from ESPN, and it reads, "College football playoff won't use conference titles as tiebreakers. And it goes on to list, you know, the actual things that they're going to use, right? She says the four highest ranked conference champions will receive a first round bye. The other tiebreakers remain and include strength of schedule, head-to-head results, and comparative outcomes of common opponents without incenting margin of victory. Your thoughts on all of that?
Well, so let's spell this out a little bit. I mean, they're still saying the four highest-ranked conference champions move to the front of the line. So clearly it still means something. You got to win your conference championship. So I don't know. It's a little confusing. I was trying to parse through exactly what they're saying, because why would you have a tiebreaker? You know, like, why would a tiebreaker come into play with a conference champion from one conference and a conference champion from another conference? They're both in no matter what. So I don't know. As I was parsing through it, I was like, this is kind of confusing, because how would you have a tiebreaker between conference champions?
Well, wouldn't it be a tiebreaker between conference championship losers?
Yeah, I guess that's probably what they're saying more, but you don't automatically get in if you're a conference championship loser. So,
yeah.
I don't know. It was very confusing trying to parse through it, because I'm like, what exactly are they trying to say here? I think what they're trying to do is cover their butts when a situation like last year happens, where Florida State is an undefeated ACC champ and they're left out. But clearly in a 12-team playoff, Florida State would be in, and they would move to the front of the line. And we lose the Pac-12 now, and that's not even a conference we have to worry about. So really, your top four highest-ranked conference champions are going to be the ACC champ, the Big Ten champ, the Big 12 champ, and the ACC champ. And that's kind of it. So I don't know. Maybe I need to reread the article to kind of see what they're saying there, but to me, the biggest thing we still have to parse through, and I'm still waiting on an announcement from Greg Sankey and the SEC, is how the hell do we decide tiebreakers for who goes to Atlanta if we end up with four SEC teams that are all 10-2 and they all didn't play each other, so we don't have head-to-head to go off of? How do we decide who goes to Atlanta? I think that still needs to be determined.
I'm curious what your solution would be if you have one.
Well, I think the first and foremost is you know, the easiest one is you take care of head-to-head, right? I mean,
sure.
Alabama and Georgia play each other this year. If at the end of the year, say, Texas is 11-1 and Bama and Georgia are both 10-2, you know, whoever won the Georgia-Bama game goes in ahead of them. But, you know, then what happens if Ole Miss is 10-2 and they lost to Georgia, but Georgia lost to Bama? I mean, you really start to get into some tough territory there, and you know, maybe this thing won't even matter, because it'll just play itself out. But this is one of those things that we're not talking enough about with the eradication of SEC East and SEC West. Because what was the easiest thing? It was like, well, if you're SEC West, you play everybody in the West, and so you know, head to head goes into play. And so if Bama was 7-1 and LSU was 7-1, and Bama beat LSU, well, Bama goes to Atlanta. So that, you know, that was always easy, but it's not a level playing field anymore. We don't have division. So it's just the two best teams with the best records. But, yeah, I think there's going to be a scenario where we have multiple SEC teams that are 10-2. And, you know, if it's a big jumbled mess about who beat who head-to-head, you know, I think the next step is you go conference record. So if you're 10-2 overall, but you were, you know, whatever it was, 7-1 in the conference, another team was 6-2, then it's a little bit easier to go that path. And then probably you go maybe highest ranked team at that point. So then, you know, we get into they always say it doesn't matter when you lose, but it matters when you lose. I mean, look at Bama last year. They were clearly forgiven for losing to Texas early in the season than Georgia was losing to Bama, you know, in the final week of the season. So, we'll see how it plays out, but yeah, I'm shocked with as head of the game as the SEC and Greg Sankey is on everything. I still can't believe they haven't come out with a firm rule and determination on how they're going to figure out tiebreakers for the SEC title game.
What gets me is whether it's with that situation or the college football playoff and whatever, you know, limitations or restrictions that they're trying to put on themselves, I really just have a hard time believing that when they say they're not going to take something into consideration, or they're not going to look at this, or they're not going to compare two indifferent things, I just don't believe it, Chris. I really, really don't, because they're human beings and it's impossible to ignore some of that type of stuff.
Yeah, and we know human decisions go into this whole thing. I mean, let's be real. We know why they didn't say why Florida State didn't make the playoff last year, but we know why Florida State didn't make the playoff last year.
You already know.
Because they lost Jordan Travis. Their most important. I mean, if they hadn't lost Jordan Travis, Florida State, I think, was going to be in, and it was going to be a toss-up between Georgia, Texas, and Alabama. I think the whole thing was they realized when Bama beat Georgia, they said, well, Bama's in. And then the other side of the contingent was saying, well, you can't put in Bama without Texas because Texas beat Bama. And so then they were kind of like, well, we'll leave out Florida State, we'll leave out Georgia. But, no, make no mistake. They will do whatever the hell they want. And it's a committee that 1 week says strength of schedule is the most important thing. The next week they say head-to-head matters. The next week they say it's about margin of victory. I mean, every week they change their tune on what matters just based on who they want to put in. And I get it. Like, at the end of the day, you want the sexiest names in. You want the biggest names, the biggest programs that are going to bring the biggest eyeballs. I get it. Like, that's the end game here. So, you know, it's funny. I think, who was it, Andy Staples put out last night, like, a projected 12-team playoff based off of, you know, the preseason AP poll and kind of how things have played out in years past. And my God, it's something like Ole Miss playing Iowa in the first round. I mean, it's like, God, if that's the draw, App State was playing at Bama, or no, it was West Virginia at Bama, and App State was in there. I'm like, good God, if that's the field we get, the committee is going to be kicking themselves going, all right, maybe we need to go to a 20-team playoff, because the 12-team playoff with those teams is just abysmal.
Yeah, just some of those teams and conferences that are guaranteed spots, or they want to be in there to make it, you know, to be nice to everybody. I feel like they're going to get away from that pretty quickly in terms of television ratings and ticket sales and all that type of stuff. When the money isn't what they believe it is, they'll change it up to make more of that. I can guarantee you that. Chris Gordy, host of Locked On SEC, with us here on ESPN 106.7. You mentioned the AP Top 25, and we've got fall camps continuing on. I mean, we have football in 2 weeks, Chris. What all have you been hearing from around the conference since the last time we talked to you? I mean, unfortunately, there's been more injuries and stuff too.
Yeah, I mean, that's been the biggest story we've been talking about a lot to the SEC, is all these injuries that have been happening. And my God, I mean, for Texas, it's one thing to lose. Look, they were going to go 50-50 carries wise with their two running backs that they ended last season with. Because if you remember, Jonathan Brooks was an 1,100-yard rusher for Texas last year. He got hurt towards the end of the year. And they basically went 50-50 carries between C.J. Baxter and Jaden Blue. They did that in the Big 12 title, and then they did it in the playoff game against Washington, which they lost. But both those guys were pretty productive. And now you lose C.J. Baxter for the season. Okay, they can just turn to Jaden Blue and say, okay, you're our guy. But even still, I don't know if we know if Jaden Blue is a guy who could carry the workload. And so they were saying, well, some of these talented freshmen they brought in, like Christian Clark, who I think was rated the number six running back in the country, he comes in as a true freshman, and he's done for the year. And so now you start to look around that running back room at Texas and go, my God, like, this is a real problem. And you know, frankly, I said they ought to put Jaden Blue in bubble wrap for the next 2 weeks just to make sure nothing happens with him. But yeah. I just created this scenario in my head. Like, think of week two. Texas opens with Colorado State. They should beat them going away. But think about week two. They got to go to Michigan and play in the Big House. And what happens if Jaden Blue can't move the pile? What if they can't run the football and they got to go one-dimensional and just fling it around the field? Look, Quinn Ewers is talented enough. They can probably win that game throwing it around the football field. But I'm just saying, like, suddenly it puts Texas in a real dangerous spot to lose some tough football games if they can't run the football effectively. And a big reason is due to injuries. So that one's fascinating to watch. Kentucky, you know, Chip Traynham was expected to be their starter from Ohio State. You know, he broke his hand. He's going to be out 3 to 4 weeks. They're saying basically he'll probably just miss the opener and maybe week two. But if you look at Kentucky's schedule, I mean, I think they get South Carolina and Georgia very early in the schedule. And so it's like they want to have their full complement of offensive players. Oklahoma lost Gibson, one of their wide receivers. He probably wasn't going to be one of their top two receivers, but was going to be probably that number three or number four, and so that one hurts. So, yeah, it hasn't been like marquee names, Reuben Owens at A&M. He was going to be, you know, rotational back. But it's guys that were probably going to make big names for themselves in the SEC this year. And thank God, knock on wood, we haven't had a big-name quarterback hurt or anything like that. But, yeah, this is that time of year, man. And Kirby Smart said it great the other day. He goes, it's a fine balance between pushing your guys hard and wanting to get ready for the season and also being protective of them and taking care of their bodies to start the season. He said, whoever can figure that out on how to find that fine balance can make a lot of money. But he goes, we have to be smart about it. But it is a tough challenge because, yeah, it's hot out there. You want to push your guys and go, hey, man, get out there. And then suddenly, you know, soft tissue or, you know, an ACL tear or something like that, and you're lost for the year.
Chris Gordy, host of Locked On SEC, with us on ESPN. One basketball question before I let you get out of here. You probably have seen what I'm talking about, and you probably know what I'm talking about. Our good friend Doug Amos in Montgomery talked about it earlier today. Terrence Oglesby tweeted out his way too early SEC basketball predictions. Had Alabama at 1 and Auburn at 9. Can you just tell me in a few words why he's wrong?
Well, I saw that, and one, I had to look up who Terrence Oglesby was. It didn't even, like, off the top of my head, it wasn't exactly like this was, one of the marquee, names in all of college basketball. It's not like Jay Billis put out his list, but yeah, I think that's trolling. I mean, that's gotta be trolling.
That's what
I mean, who in their right mind thinks what they saw from Auburn and what Auburn's done in the portal and recruiting, that they would be the ninth best team in the SEC. That's just absolutely silly. So you want to put Bama one, okay, that's fine. I'll go with you on that one. But Auburn is no lower than 4. I mean, if we're being real with ourselves. And, you know, and other people jumping on the Arkansas bandwagon too. I've seen a lot of people jumping on it. And it's like, okay, look, we get Calipari's track record, but we can't ignore what he's done, underachieved the last handful of years at Kentucky. I just think he's going to walk in Arkansas and suddenly they're going to be a top two team in the country. I just think that's ridiculous. But, yeah, I think that's absolute trolling. There's nobody in their right mind thinks Auburn basketball is going to be that bad this year.
Well, that's exactly what I told Doug earlier. I said I think it was a guy whose social media was a little too dry for his liking and found a fan base that he knew he could get under their skin, and he did exactly that because they have jumped all over him on social media today. Chris, tell the people where they can find you, where they can find Locked On SEC, and what's coming up as we get closer to football.
Yeah, just search Locked On SEC wherever you get your podcasts. We've had some great interviews. Still been bringing some of our interviews from SEC Media Days up there at Locked On SEC, but we're about to get into the thick of it, man. We're booking our trip. I'm going to head out to Las Vegas for the LSU-USC opener here.
Nice.
In 2 weeks. And I'm debating on what we'll do, but we may even do a Locked On show from down on the field after the game there. And yeah, it's going to be here before we know it, man. And I love all the reports we're getting out of Auburn's camp. You know, these freshman receivers, I send a disclaimer out to Hugh, you better play these kids because every day has been one of these dudes who's been stepping up and impressing. And I just don't want to hear the crap we get in the season. And Hugh goes, well, you know, the freshmen, they got to earn their playing time. Hell no, get them out there. Nothing against Keandre Lambert Smith and Robert Lewis, but we want to see those freshmen out there. So excited to see Auburn. It'll be here before we know it.
Spoken like a true fan of Auburn, Chris. I mean, we know you're just a huge Auburn guy around here.
Well, I could just already hear it. I could already hear Hugh coming out after the opener going, yeah, look, I mean, we wanted to get Cam Coleman involved, but you know, he's still learning. He's still growing. Shut up. Put his butt out there. Let's go.
I love it. You probably speak for every Auburn fan listening right now. We're going to see you. We're going to see you on the plane September 28th for the Auburn-OU game, right?
I haven't planned out my schedule yet, but that would certainly be a fun one to get to. Absolutely.
Okay. You just let me know. We'll make sure to get you taken care of on this side of SEC country. Man, always a pleasure, always a blast. Thanks so much.
Thanks,
that's Chris Gordy, Locked On SEC daily podcast on the Southeastern Conference. I figured he'd have a few things to say today. We'll take our final break, come back, wrap it all up here on the Thursday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Winding down here on the Thursday edition of On the Line, what a fantastic show today. And look, I say something like that every day, but I believe it. Some shows are better than others. And today was up there, man. Today was a really good show. We had a lot of fun. Christian Griffin joined us in the studio, and glad to have him every day that we can here on ESPN. And we had Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network in hour number one. Just got off the phone with Chris Gordy, who always lights up the airways when he gets on the phone. So we appreciate him and Brad Law and you being with us each and every day, and of course today as well. If you missed any of that, we've also talked about the ESPN FPI projections for Auburn this year, and then news that was big but needs to be digested even more is the fact that the College Football Playoff announced they will not use tiebreaker, they will not use conference titles as tiebreakers in college football. And, you know, you look at it a little bit more, Christian, as we get out of here. It makes sense what they're saying, but our reaction was based off of what is coming down the line.
Yes.
Maybe not this decision in particular,
but
we can see the vision of what we've talked about for quite some time. That day of reckoning is coming. The day that we've talked about, and the listeners know, it will get here at some point. And for those people that told me I was wrong, I can't wait.
Yes, it will be one of those days. It was not a today thing. This was bullet point number 3, and it might be bullet point number 10 or 14 or 20.
Right.
That we are expecting, and it is a full-on expectation that our reaction is based off of what is going to happen. But again, another bullet point that feels like it adds more question marks to the College Football Playoff than exclamation points or answers. Gordy said it best. It feels like them trying to cover themselves up a little bit because very vague with everything brings more concerns, brings more questions than any sort of answers, really.
Right, and what sucks is what he also said is throughout the year, we won't have any clarity on it because
No. The
standard will change game by game, result by results. And he said it, and my listeners know, for the people that listen to my show every day, what's it all about? About the money. That's what it's about. And so the narrative will change based off of what team wins, what team loses, and which teams they want to fit in the College Football Playoff. Yep. That's how this works, ladies and gentlemen. That's how it goes.
It is how many times you can press Shift 4 on your computer.
Yeah.
$$$$.
That's it. That's what it's about. And as Chris admitted that he knows that, and we know that. We all know that. It just hurts to be reminded about it because you get so in the weeds of, man, if Auburn does this, or if Michigan does this, or if Oregon wins this many games, they can make a playoff. But then you get humbly reminded, does it really matter? Does it really matter what they try to do or what they set out to do? Because it almost seems a little predetermined. And that's just a slap in the face sometimes. But, oh well, that's what we get to talk about every single day.
So much fun, especially when you can see it coming from a distance and you just know that it's a matter of time until it slaps the world in the face.
It is a matter of time. Well, we got to get out of here. Thanks to the Orthopedic Clinic for bringing you the second hour each and every day. You're with me tomorrow, right?
I am.
Cool. Uncle T-Bone will be here, too. We'll have a heck of a free-for-all Friday, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.